This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. When you think about renewable energy, there are two renewable energies, I think, that probably pop up into your head. First, of course, there's solar, and second, wind, whichever order that you like. But there's energy technology that has been growing dramatically around the country, and that is called geothermal. It's harvesting heat from the earth, below the earth, right below the surface or way down there, on a very small scale. You can work it in, with a heat pump to heat your house, or even cool your house. On a larger scale, there's a lot of hot water beneath the earth that can be used to heat buildings directly. It can even be used to generate electricity. In California, over 4% of the state's electric power comes from geothermal sources. There are 13,000 gigawatt hours of electricity generated there last year. And my next guest says that right now there are 103 significant geothermal projects underway in 13 states around the country, where a few years ago there would just have been a handful. Joining me now is Carl Gaywell. He's the executive director of the Geothermal Energy Association in Washington, joining us on the phone. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for having me on.
Simply speaking, how would this work? How does it work? You pump water into the ground, or you pump hot water out, or both?
Well, basically, with the power system, what you're doing is you're finding the spot in the ground that has hot rocks and water, and then you're drilling down into it and just bringing up steam, which you use to run a power plant.
And in your home system?
A home system, it's you're using the temperature under the ground. So if you know, most anywhere in the country, if you go down about 4 or 5 feet, the temperature is going to be between 50 and 60 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So you can run a loop out through the ground that comes in and comes through a sort of a little heat exchanger. Well, in the winter, that heat exchanger is going to be bringing in 60 degrees temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So you're preheating, you're heating all the way up to 60 degrees. In the summertime, you're going to be using that to provide your cooling, and it will provide most of your cooling. In a way, it's like if you think of some of these passive solar designed homes, if you'll build a home underground, it has pretty steady temperature all year round.
Yeah, you go in the basement, it stays pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what you're doing, instead of building your home under the ground, you're running this pipe loop under the ground and using it to bring that energy into your house.
So it's just as simple as that. If you just dig 5 or 6 feet down, you lay the pipe in the ground and loop it back into a heat exchanger?
Well, in very simplistic terms, it's that simple. The installation really needs to be done by a qualified contractor, because most of this it has to be designed for the site, so you're using the maximum amount of efficiency, and you also have products which are usually fused piping, so that it's most of the piping I've seen is warrantied for 50 years, so you don't have leaks, because it's pretty expensive to put that ground loop in.
Right, and they're doing this in California.
They're doing it all around the country. They're
doing
some in California, but frankly, it's been huge in the Southeast and the Northeast. I think there's something around 50,000 heat pumps a year installed, so. And we're seeing fairly strong growth. About two-thirds of that's in homes and about a third in commercial buildings. So in the east and the southeast, you're seeing a big renaissance and growth in geothermal heat pumps. And in the west, you're seeing a dramatic growth in geothermal power.
Hmm. And I guess then there's a struggle to keep up with the equipment and the installers.
Exactly. That, in fact, is we get so many calls from people saying, how do I find a designer? Where do I find an installer? It literally drives us a little bit crazy, but it's great. I mean, it's great to be busy like that. And and then for the power side, the same issue. We're building so many new power plants. People are waiting for people to bring in drilling rigs or bring in turbine equipment. And right now it's actually building the infrastructure that's holding things up a bit and raising costs a little bit.
Yeah. So do you have to, for the industrial side, do you have to find hot rocks? Or if you drill just deep enough, you'll hit them anywhere?
Well, if you, the center of the earth is, 9,000 degrees Fahrenheit or so, and different points, particularly in the west, that heat comes pretty close to the surface. And in many cases, you'll see fumaroles or hot springs, but not all. And in those areas, we've had people who just accidentally run into hot water. I remember one farmer in Idaho talking about he was drilling an irrigation well for his potato farm, and he drilled the well. The well started coming up with water that was 200 degrees Fahrenheit. He decided he couldn't put that on his potato crop.
Well, he can cook them if you want.
Well, he'd have to pre-cook the potatoes. But he was a smart man, and he turned around, and he uses that hot water, instead of raising potatoes, to raise alligators, to raise tilapia, and to raise catfish. And he claims he makes something close to 100 times more money per acre foot of water than he would if he was just farming potatoes.
It's the Nouveau Jed Clampett story.
Instead of
oil, he's got hot water.
Exactly.
Wow. 1-800-989-8255. I guess this is the model, and when I think about geothermal, I think of Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that probably where they use this the most?
Well, I think proportionately Iceland may be one of the largest users, although it's not alone. I mean, the Philippines, 25% of the electricity in the Philippines is geothermal power today.
Mm-hmm.
But Iceland is very dominant for heating. They heard many of their buildings as all district heating systems using geothermal energy. I think it's about a third of their power supply, the rest of which I think is hydropower. But they're one of the first 100% renewable countries, and I think New Zealand wants to be right behind them as well. Mm. They're building a lot of additional geothermal in New Zealand.
Jason in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Jason.
Hey, guys. Big fan. Thanks for having me on the air.
You're welcome.
So I had, I guess, a question and a comment. The first question is, we use geothermal, the system in our home, and have been surprised with how inefficient it turned out to be, at least in the terms of an energy bill. And I was wondering if there's been a lot of developments in the last 15 years and how efficient it is, or if maybe it's just a commentary on my father's building of the house and insulation.
Did he do this himself, install it himself?
He didn't install it himself. He built the home himself, but he had a contractor come out and put these coiled loops deep in the earth, and it was supposed to be a more efficient thing and pays for itself. And I guess Tennessee Valley Authority, who's our local electric provider, provides some incentives for people to use these more efficient heating and cooling systems. And I think, I don't know if it comes back in the form of a check or a rebate of sorts, but that's about it.
Does something come back?
Well, I'm saying there was financial incentives to use this system as opposed to a traditional heating and cooling system.
And you say this is 15 years ago?
About 15, yeah.
About 15. Interesting question.
Well, Ira, I got to be up front. I'm not an expert on heat pump technology, but it's obviously changed in 15 years, I would hope. And it would be fully my expectation that has happened. But I think it's also important for people to make sure they have a well-designed system. As I mentioned earlier, we refer people to two groups, which actually have directories on their website. One is the Geothermal Heat Pump Consortium, and the other is the International Ground Source Heat Pump Association. That's quite a mouthful.
Yeah.
But particularly at the Ground Source Heat Pump Association's website, you can go in there by state and look up designers and installers and look at different systems. And to have a well-designed system, I think, is a really huge part of making them effective.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'll pass it along.
Thank you, Jason.
Bye-bye.
Good luck. You work a lot with industrial side, correct?
I work a lot with the companies that produce geothermal power and also both large and small. In fact, I was just working on my way here today with someone who is about to put two power plants for the first two in New Mexico, one of which will be a small power plant at a greenhouse, which is essentially like distributed generation because it'll be powering the greenhouse. And they'll also be supplying a power plant that'll provide 10 megawatts of power to the grid at the same time. And I think they'll be groundbreaking both of those on Tuesday.
At what point do you say I'll go for geothermal in terms of drilling, for industrial? When does it make sense?
It really makes sense when you have to have enough hot water and you have to have enough temperature. But that's what those numbers are, they interact. So in other words, you need more flow at lower rates. But also technology has changed that dramatically. And that's one of the things you see in this new growth is that 20 years ago, people would say you need to have at least 300 degree Fahrenheit water or higher to do geothermal power. Today, with these small binary power systems, or organic Rankine cycle power systems, like the one they installed at Chena Hot Springs in Alaska, and the one they're going to be installing in New Mexico, they say they can generate power with water down to 160 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, it's hot, but, as I point out to people, that's hotter than a cup of coffee at a fast food restaurant, cooler than a cup of coffee at a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
And so you're going to find water at that temperature in many more places, and they're also producing them in, much smaller units, so you could put it in a small agricultural unit, or like this in a greenhouse, or like the Chena Hot Springs, and be providing the electricity for the whole system as well as the heat that it needs to run the operation.
Hmm. Let's go to Mark in Boston. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. I'm actually from Lawrence, where we have a very large mill that we're hoping to heat with geothermal. The development is a little bit stalled right now, but they're planning to drill five geothermal wells next to the Merrimack River. My question actually is, when I was reading on the web about geothermal, I came across articles about a situation in Basel where there had been some seismic activity. Some people were asserting that there was seismic activity caused by geothermal drilling. I wonder if you could discuss that. I'll take the answer off the line.
Yeah, are you going to set off earthquakes, I guess is what he's asking.
Well, Basel was a bit of a unique example, because in Basel they weren't drilling for geothermal. They were actually trying to do one of these enhanced geothermal systems where what they were going into a rock structure and they were injecting a large amount of very cold water to try to fracture the rock. And when you do that, when you inject a large amount of water like that into a hot rock structure, you're going to have seismic activity. Hmm. But that's the rare item. In most cases, we're just drilling into the system. We're not injecting large amounts of cold water. And there is a pretty strong tracking of what happens at the geothermal power plants around the country. Most of them, I think all of them, run seismic monitors constantly. And while there is sometimes a small amount of micro earthquakes that occur near drill mm-hmm. bits, there's the Geologic Survey and others pretty much monitors these, and if done right, it shouldn't be a problem. I haven't seen any major problems in the U.S., but the Basel, I've talked to a lot of people about Basel, where I think they basically did it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question from Second Life from PR Mantis saying, if we take all the heat out of the center of the Earth, will that lead to trouble?
I actually have somebody ask me whether if we did that, could we offset global warming?
Uh-huh.
And I said, the problem is it's too big. There's something like 100 million megawatts of thermal energy radiating on a continuous basis from the center of the Earth. And right now, we could use as much as we can figure out how to utilize, and it would be such a small fraction of mm-hmm. radiation, the radiating heat coming out, that it wouldn't make much of a difference. But it might be, in a way, if we could use that much geothermal power, that might be some mm-hmm. interesting trade-offs, but I don't think we'll get there in my lifetime.
How does it compare? I know California is installing solar power.
Mm-hmm.
How does it compare to, let's say, solar thermal power?
Uh-huh. Well, some of the companies in the geothermal business are in the solar thermal business, too, and there's a lot of both being installed in California, where they have very strong mm-hmm. State standards promoting it. The biggest difference is how the supply comes out, in the sense that solar has the advantage in California of being just about on peak. So when the demand is at its peak, the solar production is just matching that really nicely. And on geothermal side, we're baseload production 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And I know many people at the Energy Commission feel that actually in California, solar and geothermal together are just about the perfect match for their demand needs for their electric system.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the geothermal this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Carl Gaywell. How did you get involved in this?
Oh, boy. I used to work with the wind industry,
yeah.
And before that with the National Wildlife Federation and some of the environmental groups. And I guess my interest in both wind and geothermal was promoting environmentally better energy sources and trying to turn around what we're doing with fossil fuels around the world.
So do you agree that it's really up to the states? The states are taking the leads in all of these things? What about the energy tax credit that remains mired in the Senate that has yet to be passed this year?
Well, right now, I think what's driving the market are state renewable standards, which are giving you a very strong market, and California's talking about even pushing it further. Also, high prices. You can't ignore the fact that prices right now are not just high,
mm-hmm.
but investors and people looking at the energy business are beginning to say they're going to stay high. So they're willing to invest in renewable power across the board, just about. Solar, geothermal, it costs much more up front. So you've got to have a longer-term view to be willing to invest in it. But the third part of the stool that's really propping up this dramatic growth we're seeing are federal tax incentives, which, as you mentioned, Congress right now is in one of these awkward situations where everybody, Democrat and Republican, seems to say, oh, yes, those are important credits. Let's get them extended. And no one just seems to disagree with that, but they seem to have a major disagreement about whether and how to pay for doing that. And that seems to be hanging it up right now, although I understand they're going to come back in September and try one more time. So we'll see what happens.
Mm, that would be the seventh time, I think, something like that.
Yeah, it's you know, many times to the altar here, but not quite yet married.
Mm-hmm. So where do we go with geothermal? I mean, are we looking for people to work in the industry? There's such a demand here.
We're running job ads in our newsletter every week and getting new ones constantly. Yeah, there is actually a shortage of especially trained people from the drilling business to the power plant business.
Is there a degree you can get in geothermal, or is it basically the parts, the drillers, the power, you know, the electricians, things like that?
There's a lot of skilled labor that works. And in fact, a lot of the labor is going to be construction of the power plants themselves. One of the biggest parts is the first couple of years for building the plant and doing the drilling rigs. But there are some programs at the university level that do specialize in geothermal. The University of Nevada, Reno has a geothermal center. Stanford University has a geothermal center. And Southern Methodist University in Texas also has a geothermal center.
Mm-hmm. And as far as installing it, the small system in your own home, there are ways to find out how to do that and hopefully not a shortage of installers.
Well, actually, the qualified installers are in short supply, and particularly those to install the ground loop. And actually, at Oklahoma State University is where the International Ground Source Heat Pump Association is located at Oklahoma State. And if you go there, they can talk to you about training programs for heat pumps and installers as well.
Because these are all the new green jobs we keep talking about.
And the good news and the bad news is we employ a lot of people. The reason that's bad news is some of the people who run these companies look at their geothermal plants and then they look at their natural gas plants and they go, wow, look at how many people I have to pay for.
Yeah,
but I think that's good for the economy, particularly right now. I think what we need is new green jobs, and that's what we're starting to see in a very dramatic way.
Well, Carl, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Okay, thanks, Ira.
You're welcome. Carl Gaywell is Executive Director of the Geothermal Energy Association in Washington. We're going to take a break. When we come back, a different energy alternative, ethanol. Yeah, we've been talking a lot about ethanol, but there may be some mythology about it that you haven't heard about. Can we have fuel and food at the same time? My next guest says we can, and we can do it by producing ethanol locally. We'll talk about it, get your opinions. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.